This is the Change Management Podcast by the University of South Wales. My name is Jonathan Deacon, Professor of Marketing in the School of Design, Digital and Marketing. And I'm joined by my colleague Phil Harfield from the Faculty of Creative Industries, an expert in design thinking. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Jonathan. Good to be here again.
Good to see you. In Season 3, we're exploring the concept of design thinking, how it can apply to business and how it works in practice. We discuss how design thinking can help any organization become an agile one. In this episode, we'll be discussing how customers are digitally empowered to seek out meaningful experiences with organizations, as well as exploring how organizations can use customer insights to drive change from within. To help us do that, today we have a guest, and it's Paul Loughlin, Managing Director of Loughlin Consultancy. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Jonathan. Delighted to be with you. Sounds a great podcast.
Thank you. So let's start off with that very pertinent question. For our listeners today, can you outline, both of you, what is meaningful customer engagement? Phil, I'll come to you first.
Okay, Jonathan. So I think this has to be a reciprocal thing. So all I might think is about, from a business perspective, how we engage our customers and understand the value of the relationship. I think it's really this idea of, from a customer's perspective, what are we giving them as a customer exchange? So what sort of meaning are they getting from the experiences they're deriving from us as a business? How does it align with our values as a customer? Perhaps from an organizational or a business perspective, what are we getting from them in terms of the insights, the hidden meaning, the unmet needs of the consumer, how that's really being driven, I guess, by the digital transformation and the digital domain that we're working within now.
So this is a collaborative experience kind of concept.
Yeah, well, a customer, you know, the trust, the relationship you're trying to build with a customer and audience is really what the golden egg for being in business is all about, you know. So my experience of having a business for several years ago and working on a market stall in Camden Lock when I was setting up my business, you know, so the experience of listening to feedback from people straight away, or, you know, of couples arguing about whether they liked or didn't like my products, hearing it firsthand, what it means to satisfy their needs. You know, I think that gives you a real fundamental sense of what feedback and what engaging with customers in that dialogue looks like, really.
Okay, Paul, you're speaking and dealing with clients within your consultancy, organizations, businesses all the time. From your perspective then, what do you see as a kind of definition, if you like, or your perspective on what is meaningful customer engagement?
It's a broad term, so there are many angles to this. I think probably what I'd add as a build is definitely an experience that customers actually value, in what they're trying to get done in their interaction with the organization. It helps them, it improves their experience and improves their perception of your organization, and then incrementally works toward the kind of things that were referenced, whether that's more retention, utilization, trusting you to buy other products or services. I think the other take on it I'd probably share is increasingly these days as well, something that differentiates. When more and more the services and products are being consumed digitally, your competitors are just a click away, just a frustration in the experience away. So the meaningful customer engagement has to be that you're easy to do business with and it feels appropriate and relevant to what they're trying to get done. So it's a differentiation from your competitors.
Want to empower your teams to think differently and solve complex problems? Start your design thinking journey today. Search USW Design Thinking.
I talk a fair bit when I'm talking to businesses and indeed students around this whole concept of the zero moment of truth.
Mm.
What the digital landscape has given us as consumers and customers is this opportunity to have what Schumpeter used to call perfect knowledge. Schumpeter, for those who don't know, was a great economist. An economist who used to do a lot of stuff about applying that kind of thinking within a creative framework, actually, when you look back at it. And that zero moment of truth, that perfect knowledge is and has only become available to us as consumers and customers since the advent, really, I suppose, of not just the internet, but probably Google, to be honest. And what it actually means is that when we're looking for anything in particular, we can furnish ourselves with a very good and broad picture of what's out there, what prices are, and so on. Therefore, that drives us as consumers to that endpoint, which says, okay, so what does then differentiate company A from company B. And increasingly, I think we're seeing that increase in what this podcast is all about, which is, you know, how we become creative about those online experiences and that online engagement. So how are you seeing, Paul, organizations empowering their customers, you know, given that they have lots of information at their fingertips and able to come into a purchase decision with all of that? Something's got to make the difference. So how are you seeing that?
What I'm seeing is people recognizing they have to think outside sector. Increasingly these days, your customer's last best experience with anyone online, maybe Amazon, maybe Spotify, is the new bar as to what they expect from people I deal with. So I begin to see people kind of recognize, think what change we've gone through in recent decades. I think even if you think about 30 years, you've got Tesco and others got people to realize, I should actually be rewarded for my loyalty. So you've got to think of a way of showing you recognize they've been with you for a while. Here's some kind of loyalty bonus. Netflix and others got people to realize, maybe there ought to be some kind of recommendation engine to help me navigate all these options. I'm expecting you to only talk to me about stuff that's relevant to me. You kind of know what I've got and what's there. You think of the influence of people like Trustpilot. People expect to be able to see a transparent rating on your service, perhaps through an independent like Trustpilot, and have that shared back. I think TripAdvisor probably took that further to people expect to be able to close down an organization if it doesn't give good service. And then even the rise of social media channels, the greater prevalence of user-generated content, and maybe people would be interested in customers being able to hear from other customers how they used your product, what it looked like on them, et cetera, right through to marketplaces. So I think combinations of all of that, boiling down normally to an experience that's got to be easy, got to be a suitable, Forrester wrote a book called Mobile Mindshift, a suitable mobile moment, as they called it. You recognize how you can use the technology to be clear about the likely context in which a customer is trying to get a certain job done. And then you design the experience to help that activity be as easy as possible and provided with the relevant information. And finally, for a lot of the clients I deal with a lot of large companies and financial services companies, start being a bit smarter and realize you need to stop asking so many questions. A lot of it you already know somewhere. Join up your blooming systems and don't have to ask them again. And remember what people have told you already. That makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah. Phil, how do you see that then? How do you see organizations empowering their customer base?
I absolutely agree with what Paul was saying. I think the idea of passive consumers is long dead. You know, the idea now, if I want to go and purchase a pair of jeans, now I could get a new pair, I can get a used pair, I can get a leased pair, I can buy them on HP. So I think the idea of we just have to go to visit the local high street now is obviously is diminished. So, but the choice for us is the thing. So I think the main thing about not being passive recipients of kind of marketing information either, you know, we look at reviews, we can look at testimonials, peer platforms and forums we can go on to find out. So we're not data poor, but I guess the flip side of that is, you know, who's controlling this data? And the challenge for companies is who's giving out them the correct information, not disinformation, not unintended or unbranded information. I think the experience of perhaps shopping online is fraught with this. Am I on the right website? Am I looking at the right product, or is it counterfeit product? So I think there's a lot of obviously digital enablement going on, but there's also this kind of behind the scenes diminishing of trust through the choice. So I think managing this empowerment is the real challenge for companies, really.
It's a very interesting point you make there around trust. Back in the day, maybe, goodness me, about 10, if not more years ago, a guy called Barry Schwartz, a researcher from the States, came out with this idea that there was a paradox of choice, that if we empowered the customer to the point where, as you say, Paul, there's a lot of choice out there. And Phil, you're talking about buying a pair of jeans. If you have all of that choice, there is a danger, of course, that the customer doesn't make a choice because they're so bombarded. You know, psychologically, they get very fatigued around that. When I first read that, my mind started to think about the concept, of which I've taken, you know, forward into various academic and practitioner forums, where I actually talk about the fact that there is no such thing as a customer anymore. that we have gone past, you know, that very simple terminology to a place where it's a collective approach. So where you both empower, but you also gain insight almost simultaneously. Phil, when we're talking about generating kind of insight, how are we seeing that? How do organizations, or how can organizations gather that insight then?
Well, there's you know, multiple methods and methodologies, and I guess scientific approaches, and you know, qualitative and quantitative approaches to researching the issues. So for gathering evidence-based and data and analysis of data, you know, data mining, etc. But I think the real more hard to understand and not so transparent way is looking at, you know, the emotional responses, the behavioral responses. So behavioral science suddenly becomes something, and being sort of business owners, sort of stroke psychologists, suddenly becomes part of the remit of being in business.
But that sounds very academic, though, doesn't it? I mean,
I don't think it is. I think, like, you look at adverts on Indeed for customer advocacy teams, and they're talking about, you know, the psychology of sales, the empathy, the science of listening to your customers, you know, ensuring you're being heard as a call center, for example. So I think this language is in the marketplace. But then I think, for example, my students leaving my MA looking to go into this marketplace, being a behavioral scientist, or being at least having the prerequisite knowledge to get those kind of careers as a business strategist, is quite a big leap for them to go through. So I think, but that's, I guess, organizations are looking for people with these skills, looking for people with these soft skills, looking for people that can have these meaningful conversations with their customers, and then be able to translate, look at the patterns, look at the themes, look at perhaps the routines, you know, when they're observing their customers and trying to interpret them into value for that organization.
I think get the basics right first. You have to have clarity on what you as an organization are there to do, and who your customers are, and what they're trying to achieve, the job they're trying to get done. So what do you offer that people can't get better elsewhere? What job in their busy lives are you trying to help them get done? What's important for them in getting that job done? What do they value and will gladly pay for? Is it about, it's in their mind and you couldn't persuade or change it, commoditize and it's just cheapest price? Or do they really value convenience? Do they really value personalization? Do they value quality? What's going to drive the choice of those genes? And who are your customers, such that you understand things like the context in which they might be buying, the language to talk to them, how they perceive your brand and your current communications, because you're not going to get it right first time, have that feedback loop to improve. And what else might you be able to help with? I think if you have a good understanding of who you are in the minds of your consumers and what you're helping them with, you can avoid those missteps by brand where they suddenly buy, do the, guess what, we could sell you insurance as well. And the customer goes, why on earth would I want insurance from the people I buy eggs from? And you can start to get it meaningful for them that, oh, actually, no, you're just owning more of the problem that I need to get done here. Yeah, that feels appropriate. So those kind of basic questions, I think.
Good insight. Let's go back then to, given that those are some of the things that we should be looking for and maybe capturing in some way to give us that insight, given what Phil was talking about then, about the almost like the language of insight, how can any organization begin to translate that into an insight? You know, what's the trick? We've got some data, we've maybe done some analysis on it. How then do we turn that into something that we can use? And any organization, not an organization with a lot of resource, maybe even a smaller organization.
First, I think it's about recognizing what you've got already isn't insight. It might be an interesting piece of analysis. It might be an interesting piece of research. By itself, it isn't insight. I'll take the approach that all good students would and tell you what the answer is on Wikipedia. But in my defense, I wrote the answer on Wikipedia. So I define customer insight as a non-obvious understanding about your customers, which if acted upon, has the potential to change their behavior for mutual benefit. So there's four parts to that. First, what I mean by non-obvious is it isn't any one piece of analysis or BI or qual or quant research. You're likely to have to converge sources in order to get a deeper understanding. Secondly, it's got to be actionable. Can't just stay theoretical. You're pushing for an understanding you could do something about. And thirdly, it's got to be powerful enough I think to earn the label insight, to be something that would change someone's behavior. So much work in analytics, particularly things like predictive analytics, is just built on the assumption people are creatures of habit. They did this before, I'll give the same stimulus, they'll do the same thing, I understand my customers. No, you don't. You're just working on a black box that you do certain things to and get certain response. An insight is a deeper understanding that you could, from it, make an intelligent action that will prompt the customer to act differently in future. And fourthly, it's got to be sustainable. So I think it was Don Peppers, who's maybe written more on customer relationship management than anybody else, who said that the law for marketing today is earn and keep the trust of your customers. And customer insight, we've had so many scandals, so much manipulation of customers over the years, has to be grounded in that attitude of trust. What can you do that you would be happy to be transparent about that value exchange? I understand this, so I think it's reasonable to do this, which is of value to you, and we'll exchange on that.
So is that what you term as data visualization?
No, but I do think data visualization is an important skill in this place as well. So I'm saying that customer insight is the convergence of those multiple potential sources of insight, behavioral analytics, research, emotional connection. Very, very glad that was pointed out, that what people from your front line are hearing on the phones, the people who really deal with your customers mostly, and things like BI, things like the operational performance you're seeing in your business, analytics and the effectiveness of your marketing campaigns, bring all that together. And then you structure thinking techniques, things like the five whys, the kind of things you've had coming out of those good lean type thinking for years. And where data visualization can come into play is helping people see the wood for the trees, helping people see, out of all this possible information, what are the key themes that are worth it. I sometimes do customer insight generation workshops with clients, which is, back in the day, was big brown paper exercises, cut things out and stick them on the wall. So who's not going to have fun with that? And what makes analytics particularly play a powerful role in that is a well-designed chart, something visually that lets the potential insight from that, certainly the understanding, shine forth. So data visualization is that bit.
Phil, from your perspective, being the expert on design thinking, how do we take the data and how do we turn that into something which a board or an individual business person can make some sense of? How do you approach that transition from, you know, data to meaningful information?
I think the idea of the insight, as Paul alluded to, is, you know, the fact that those unexpected answers are the ones you're looking for, those things you're not asking direct questions around, the problems you don't know, the hidden needs, the hidden wants and desires are the things you're trying to get insight into. I always talk to my students about do it systematically, and they go, what does systematically mean? Well, having some kind of, not dictated to by a process, but having the things like tools and methods and techniques that you personalize as much as you can through the context of the problem you're looking at, and try and make sure you're doing it in a way that's valid. So trustworthy, where are your sources? If you're getting secondary sources, secondary data, secondary research, where are they? Where is that coming from? Is there some kind of credible audience that you're getting your information from? Obviously, there's red flags about asking your customers what they want. You know, is that necessarily the right answers you're looking for as well? So, and the idea of is it auditable? So can it be repeated? Can the information you're finding be used by others and built upon by others? So I think having this kind of almost researcher's mindset within a business and having a systematic way of looking at this, a process, but not being dictated to by process, is really how you're going to try and translate those unexpected things. You know, I think one good example I always talk about is like a washing machine manufacturer who conducted a lot of listening sessions with their customers and asking them, how do they care for their clothes? What does caring for your clothing look like within a washing machine manufacturer's mindset? The answers they got, well, caring means repairing. Caring means when I'm purchasing, looking at the materials. So I think the answers they got were unexpected, and that kind of, that's really valuable to them, to make them rethink what actually being a washing machine manufacturer is.
I'm sensing then, my translation of this is that actually generating insight and making some sense of it is about understanding people and how people do whatever it is they do with us as an organization. But having the skills to identify that and to turn that into something. So let's kind of move on. You know, what value can an organization see when they take a consumer or customer-centric approach then? What are the values that are going to come through? In essence, if I'm a business, why should I do this? What difference is it going to make? Paul?
I'll say two things. One, it gives you a much more solid foundation for unexpected change. We've had great examples in recent years of totally unpredictable, potentially, changes, certainly unexpected by organizations. If you actually understand your customers and what they're trying to get done, and you understand how you help them in their lives, then even if the world changes quite considerably, you can respond intelligently. If you've just had a fairly blind commercial relationship, you can be thrown completely out of kilter. The other thing I'll say is you build the trust to be able to get incrementally more sophisticated. I did some research with two organizations, mycustomer.com and ForgeRock, back a few years ago, into what we found as a virtuous cycle of data sharing and improved digital customer experience. You got customers to share some data with you. You then demonstrated to them that when they did, the online experience was easier and better. And guess what? They researched and behaved that they were willing to then share more data because they saw what they got back from it. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity for you to manage to get the data you need to make the experiences better by showing that you better use what you've got already. So it's that kind of virtuous cycle you want to create.
Many organizations, then, you're suggesting, they don't quite realize what they've got already and they can do something with, which will have an immediate impact on that relationship and therefore, you know, how they can develop and move their organization forward.
Absolutely. It's the complete opposite of that frustrating experience we can all relate to, of we're basically being asked our net promoter score when we come out of using the loo. Now, yeah. No one believes that which face you touch is going to change your experience next time you go into the loos. People need to see that feedback loop.
Good. Okay then, Phil. So post COVID-19 business environment, what do we expect of the future? How is consumer centricity going to change our future approach?
So obviously the role of data-driven insight is massive. So, you know, the idea of data driving things like real-time customization and personalization of your service and your product experience is huge. And also, I guess, the big drivers around, obviously, sustainability and things like sharing economies and designing. You see, the role of businesses in designing new customers rather than just being responsive and reactive to customers. Yeah, the role of business has perhaps changed forever post-pandemic. The idea of, you know, business communities working in a completely different context from before, where, okay, the customers are more enabled. The step up in digital enabling has been huge.
It's been that shift, hasn't there? You know, in the last, 14, 15 months, we've just, everybody has just become so much more adept at doing business, conducting business, buying stuff, communicating via, you know, online platforms.
Has, actually. And the complexity of the transactions has multiplied. And that has obviously led to some confusion within you know, the consumer experience as well. And there's also, I guess, that idea of we're a bit burdened by some of this, you know. So they've already been burdened by digital, you know. So online purchasing isn't perhaps as smooth as it could be, should be. We've all had moments where we've shaken our laptops in anger at being asked another question before we can consume the product. There's a responsibility for organisations to make that experience something that is valuable to us as consumers. And that's where, obviously, like I mentioned, the consumer advocacy type team within organisations are getting a lot of, I guess, flack and about how they can become psychologically aware, how they can become a listening ear for their consumers, to avoid, I guess, the backlash and the frustration that's perhaps being underserved or missold in the worst cases to consumers.
Okay, so we've had an interesting discussion about how organizations can gather data, which will become, you know, their insights, and how customer insights, you know, post the COVID-19 situation may actually change how we create and develop values within organizations, and how customer centricity is kind of key to moving forward. I might say, I think it's always been key, and we somewhere along the line, you know, lost some sight of that perhaps. So what advice would you give to any of our listeners who's planning to adopt a customer-centric approach to their business development? I'll start with you, Phil, first.
Well, I think that going back to that kind of two-sided coin of this, I think a method as an organization, the methods you gather data, you know, so be open to the non-technical, be open to the not business as usual, and also be open to problems that are core to your values, problems that you can fall in love with, essentially, that because you're going to have to put resources and time into managing this data. So I think unless it's a problem that you've spent time looking at as valuable to you as an organization, so not necessarily just consumer-related problems, but how you might be part of that designing the new consumer in light of sustainability and perhaps responsible business agenda, I think that's an important point to make.
And Paul?
I think join people up. So you're right, it's a people thing fundamentally. So be driven by what do you not understand yet about your customers? What do you not know that could make it a more human and easier experience? And join up the people in your organization who might have parts of that puzzle. Yes, the data people, the research people, the customer services people at the front line, even the IT and the finance folk. Get people to talk together and begin to brainstorm out of what you do know, and then prioritize one more thing you want to go and find out. Could you get a bit more data? Could you do a bit more research? But for goodness sake, act on it as soon as possible. You want to get into the test and learn cycle as quick as you can.
Thank you. For me, customer centricity is that rather curious blend of creative thinking, analytical data, and the overall purpose of the organization. If you want to hear more of the Change Management Podcast, please don't forget to follow us in the normal way. Thanks for listening. And thank you to our guest today, Paul Flochlin. To find out more about this podcast and other business services at USW, please visit southwales.ac.uk/business.